You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
You're tuned into The Wire. 1 hour of current affairs and analysis starting now.
Tēnā koutou katoa, nō mai, haere mai, ki te wire, mō tēnā rā. My name is Jemima and you are on The Wire for Tuesday, the 1st of September. I'm your host and Hannah is my producer and we're in studio together.
Hello.
Hello.
Very happy to be back.
Yes, to begin with, which is exciting. We've got a good show coming up today. Whai Akine coming up on the show today. With Auckland moving down to level 2.5 restrictions, students are heading back to school. I spoke with Auckland Primary Principals Association President Stephen Lethbridge and NZEI Te Reo Immediate Past President Linda Stewart about whether it is safe for students to return to school and if masks should be mandatory. Hannah spoke to Unite Union National Secretary Gerald here about the pressures for hospitality workers to go to work when they're sick. And I also spoke with Māori Party co-leader John Tamahere about his party's chances of re-entering Parliament after this year's election. He aho whakaro, we would love to hear your thoughts on any of these pieces. So tuku pā tui mai, you can send us through a text on 5395, or wire mai rāne, you can give us a call in studio on 309 3879. Also, after the show, koe e wareware e ahi ana koutou te whakarongo ki ēnei kōrero anō he pakihere rukiruki mārunga i te pai tukutuku o irarangi poho me haere ki 95 BFM irakati.com. You can catch all of these stories and more by podcast on the 95 BFM website, 95bfm.com. You can also check us out on our social medias, 95 BFM News on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. We're there posting stuff and we'd love to hear from you there as well if you're about. Anything else to add about the show this morning, Hannah?
Not really.
Cool, let's get into it.
Irirangi Poho, Radio Bosom.
The Wire.
The government eased COVID-19 restrictions this week, with Auckland dropping from alert level 3 to level 2.5, while the rest of the country remains at alert level 2. With the changes in restrictions, the government has advised that students head back to school. However, it has been reported this morning that schools have seen a number of students stay at home rather than returning to classrooms. Concerns have been raised about the 2.5 restrictions in Auckland, which require gatherings of a maximum of 10 people, and schools which cause a much larger number than 10 people to gather in close proximity. There is also the issue of masks not being mandatory in schools, as the only strict rules regarding masks is that they are mandatory on public transport in Auckland for anyone over the age of 12. I spoke to Stephen Lethbridge, who is the president of the Auckland Primary Principals Association and the principal of Point Chevalier School, about these issues regarding the level 2.5 restrictions in Auckland and what impact this has had on parents and students feeling safe at school and the education of New Zealand's young people. With students expected to return to school this week as Auckland has moved to level 2.5, how many students have returned and why are the numbers the way they are?
Yeah, look, we've had mixed numbers coming through across the Auckland region. Some schools are experiencing some significant decrease in the number of children returning, whilst others are at around the normal levels of absences. So the reasons behind that, we can only speculate, but I would suggest that parents are a little worried about sending children back to school in the current climate. I think the message that we've got to get across to our parents is that schools are a safe place to be.
Is it safe for students to return to school at the moment?
Yeah, look, from a school perspective, we've done everything that we can to make sure that our schools are ready and able. We've done this before. We've gone from level 3 to level 2 and we've managed that transition really well, and we're doing the same again this time.
Do you think this response of parents of this lockdown has been different to the previous lockdown, or is it similar numbers of students coming back to school?
Yeah, look, I think it would depend on school to school and different areas around the region in Auckland. But from our experience at Point Chevalier, we've got probably more children back this time, than we had the first time, which is probably not the norm across the region.
I'm sure some people are thinking about parents perhaps and thinking about young kids and primary school students perhaps getting up in each other's personal bubbles and being nice and close to one another. How easy is it to manage social distancing and hygiene protocols in primary schools?
Yeah, physical distancing is really difficult in a primary school setting, because just of the nature of learning and the nature of play. So what schools are doing is encouraging children to maintain that distance, but we're really, really reinforcing hygiene practices. So regular hand washing with soap and water, making sure that we're keeping away from the dreaded moist breath zone, and just making sure that distance is maintained in classrooms. And our teachers are really good at reinforcing that, but kids will be kids. So that's why the hygiene practices are quite rigorous.
Currently, masks are only mandatory on public transport, and I know at least one school in Auckland has made masks mandatory for students. Do you think that masks should be mandatory for students in schools?
Look, that will be over for individual schools to decide. However, I think that a number of schools would, especially primary schools, would recognise the difficulty of having effective mask use at schools. We know kids. We know that they will be touching and readjusting their masks all the time. They'll be taking them off, putting them on again. Goodness knows, probably if someone's... my daughter made me a Batman mask, so it's got Batman material all over it. If I came to school as a child and that was there and I saw someone else's mask that looked really good, I might go and swap it. You know, this is the thing that we've got to get into our heads with kids. They do things that might not necessarily be
help.
Great for yeah help with health with their hygiene. So for older children, they might be a bit more capable of managing a mask regime. But for younger children, the best thing that we can do is just encourage that regular hand washing, so that their hands are not touching their face all the time.
Have you noticed, I suppose, it's quite a large developmental time in life going from 5 through to 12 or 13 at primary school. Have you noticed the comprehension of the global pandemic gets better throughout the age groups, and that older students are more rigorous perhaps in washing their hands and more able to do those physical distancing and hygiene protocols for themselves individually?
Yeah, look, that would be a generalisation. You would say generally that would be the case. But again, there's always exceptions. You know, each child is individual and different. And goodness knows, as adults, we've obviously made, you know, gone to shake a hand or gone to do something like that in previous lockdowns and times. And you catch yourself. So it's human nature that you're wanting to connect and reach out. So it does take that sort of cognitive switch to be able to say, no, this is a different time. And our kids are handling it pretty well. The thing that we've got to remember is that these children are living through something that will be revisited in history classes in 25, 30 years' time. So, it's a challenge that they're going through, but like previous generations who have faced lots of challenges and kids who have been through difficult times at school, they'll get through this and they'll be fantastic. They'll come out of this okay.
Obviously, jumping in and out of lockdown. Now we've done lockdown twice, and kids have had to go from online learning back to face-to-face learning. Do you think that the education of primary school students has been affected in any sort of way by COVID-19 and the pandemic?
Well, I think that goes without saying there is definitely an effect on education. But what we've also got to remember is that there are 300 million kids in the world who are in similar situations. You know, the big message is that children will be at where they're at, and really good teachers will see where they're at and take them to where they need to be next. The thing to remember is that learning isn't a race. It's not a race. We will all get there in the end. And schooling is about year 1 through to year 13. So it's about that whole journey. That's a really important message to remember. No one is going to be well behind anyone else as a result.
That was President of Auckland Primary Principals Association, Stephen Lethbridge, speaking on students returning to schools under level 2.5 restrictions. After a wee break, we will have NZEI, Te Reo Roa, the largest education trade union spokesperson, speak on this issue as well. We'll be right back after this.
It's time to stand up and exercise your democratic duty.
No, not the general election, not the various referenda. Nope, it's your vote for the 2021 AUSA Executive. Your chance to make a tangible difference to your life at UOA and get some representation to go along with that student loan. AUSA Executive Elections, open Monday, August 31st to 4 p.m. Friday, September 4th. On the University Engage platform, all University of Auckland students are eligible to vote. Find out more at ausa.org.nz.
Heyo, what's in that soup? It looks like a mix of ingredients that, while delicious individually, are even better together.
Ha! That's not soup. It's the Student Radio Network!
Only the freshest ingredients go into the SRN Top 10. Te Te Kau o Rongo Rerike o Aotearoa gathers up the highest quality, locally grown tracks from New Zealand's student radio stations and brings them together in a fragrant, flavourful and distinctly piquant mix. A chart show for those who prefer to order off menu. Tuesday after 6 on 95 BFM Drive or online at srn.nz. Brought to you by the Student Radio Network.
The Wire.
Their relationships with their girlfriends or their wives. Wife. No one, they shouldn't have more than one wife at a time.
You're tuned into The Wire with Jemima on 95 BFM. We are midway through a couple of pieces about schools going back after Level 3 restrictions in Auckland. I spoke to Linda Stewart, principal of Mayrose School and the immediate past president of NZEI, Te Reo Roa, the largest education trade union, for the union's position on mask wearing in schools. Here is Linda. Does NZEI Te Reo Roa have a position on mask wearing in schools?
Well, I think what we say as a union is that we're not the health experts. So we are the people to talk about education and to talk about those things that are really close to people's minds around union involvement and education. However, we're not health experts. So we believe that it's around what makes people feel comfortable. So some people are more comfortable in returning to school with a mask, and some are not. So really, it's that option, and it's whatever actually enables a child and their teachers and the staff that work with them to be at school or in early childhood settings.
Now, there have been reports of a number of students not returning to school following the easing of restrictions. Why do you think this is?
Well, I think it's understandable that there are levels of anxiety around the return to school, the return to, in fact, the return to being in with large groups of other people. We've moved through a very quick time in Auckland of moving into level three. Some schools and early childhood settings will be close to places where positive testing happened. And so people are ultimately, they're anxious and they want to make the right decision for their children. I think what I'd say as a principal is that principals and staff across the country making the learning environment as safe as they possibly can and really want to be with their children. There's nothing like having an empty school, and I tell you that over level three, I was in school pretty much every day with a small group of children that were here and couldn't wait to see children come back to school. So we want them back at school. We're making our environments as safe as possible. But ultimately, parents make that final choice around whether or not their children come back to school. And if they've got a mask on and that's important to them, then that's fine. And if they don't have a mask on and that's how they want to do it, then that's fine too.
The restrictions around mask wearing on public transport, which is now mandatory. It's not mandatory, however, for children under the age of 12. Why do you think the government has made the decision about younger children and masks? And perhaps that has reflected into schools as well.
Yeah, I think really that, the health professionals will have made the call on this. They will have been the ones that look at all of the research and all the evidence that is there around what constitutes the effect of wearing of a mask. And I don't know about you, but I certainly know that with younger children, it's often harder for them to wear a mask effectively. It's hard enough as an adult often to wear a mask. So, for young children, they may be taking it on, putting it on, taking it off, numerous times, and that reduces the effectiveness of the mask. So I think they've made the call that they think is the most effective call moving forward.
That was Linda Stewart from NZEI Te Reroa. You are listening to The Wire on 95BFM. We will be right back after this. This is Home by Giantess.
Why should New Zealanders care so much about this?
Because your children will curse you if you don't.
The Wire.
With Auckland's move to level 2.5, restaurants, cafes and bars are open again for seated dining. However, unions have flagged concerns that sick workers may feel pressured to go to work, risking transmission of COVID-19. This was the case in Australia, where Victoria's outbreak was linked to people working sick. Premier Daniel Andrews, called insecure work, quote, the biggest driver of transmission. I spoke to Gerard Hare, National Secretary of Unite Union, about why this is such a pervasive problem in the hospitality industry and how to address it. I started by asking him for an overview of the problem.
Well, the big problem is that, and it's been going on for a while, is simply that workers don't have enough sick leave. Like all workers, they get sick, and actually because they're often facing a lot of customers, public facing, actually they tend to get sicker more than other workers. If you face-to-face with a lot of people during the day, you're more likely to catch whatever's going around. So this is a problem anyway, but the real issue is that the high turnover means that on any given day, likely half the workers or more are unlikely to have any sick leave available. That's because under New Zealand law, the minimum standard is you don't get any sick leave until you've been employed for 6 months. And when you've got turnover rates of 70, 80, 90, 100%, not unusual at all in hospitality. That means on any given day, half the staff have never had any sick leave. If they get sick, they face a very stark choice. Even if they're allowed to take time off, and that can be an issue for some, there's a lot of pressure is put on them not to take time off, but even if they are allowed time off, that means that they lose a day's pay, or 2 days' pay, or 3 days' pay, and these are low-paid workers. So the reality is there's enormous pressure on them to come to work sick. Now, in the normal times, that's bad. During the COVID pandemic, that's real bad, and that's a real problem. Workers basically feeling forced to come to work sick. There's not enough sick leave. The minimum is 5 days a year. That needs to be increased. But the point we're making crucially is also needs to be available from day one. People can get sick any time, not just because they've been working for 6 months. You know, well, that's the problem. And as long as we have not enough leave and we have workers, particularly in these high turnover industries, not denied any paid leave at all, that means they're going to come to work sick. And that's what we've got to stop. We've got to avoid that at all costs.
And you mentioned that the hospitality industry is the worst industry for this. Is this just because of that six-month rule, or is there more to that?
Well, the turnover, yes, there's very high turnover in this industry, and that is the main issue. The other one is, of course, work 24/7 operations often, and very weekend nights. It's quite draining on people. Because of the turnover, that means that often they're short staffed. People leave, they're not replaced straight away. There's enormous pressure on them. So that all compounds the same problem of people not only not being able to afford to take time off, but being put under a lot of pressure to come to work even if they try and take time off. So it is sad. And yes, during our experiences, that particularly cafes, bars, restaurants, takeaways, there is an enormous amount of pressure on people not to take sick leave when they should, and economic pressure, they simply haven't got it. So it is, in our experience, it's the worst of the industries we deal with anyway.
A lot of hospitality industries are very small businesses. Do you think this makes them more dependent on individual workers? For example, it's common policy to find your own cover if you can't make a shift.
Absolutely. We see that all the time. Can I take time off? Yes, if you can find your own cover. Well, that's actually illegal. It's not your job. It's not a worker's job to find their own cover. That's what management is for. And I understand, yes, there are small businesses. Yes, a lot of them are struggling now. Get that. And maybe there needs to be some government assistance for those. But the point we're making is that, hey, if businesses are going to put their hand out, they need to do their bit too to make sure that their practices are there, not spreading and putting us all at risk. So yes, finding your own cover. There's a lot of tactics used to sometimes to just make it as hard as possible for workers to take them. You know, you can't leave a message, even though there's no one there to answer the phone early in the morning when you're trying to call them sick. They're not told, but a medical certificate is demanded every single time. And I tell them that actually they could be reimbursed for it if it's less than 2 days. There's just a whole range of things that happen. And it's bad in normal times. At the moment, you know, it could be very, very bad. What we saw is that in Victoria, where they've had, you know, a really bad outbreak, the single biggest factor in terms of the ongoing outbreak, which their own premier identified, is people going to work sick. That was the major cause of that. It might not have been the original cause, but it was actually the cause of it spreading and growing and multiplying. And that's what we've got to try and avoid now. And we saw in this one, even in the Auckland outbreak, people going to work. We're not quite sure how they became infected firstly, but, you know, there were a few workplaces there where that became the way that it spread. And, we've got to try our best. And having people who are sick, they shouldn't go to work. We've heard it over and over and over again. And it's okay to say that, but if people can't pay the rent, they can't buy the groceries next week, then they really don't have much choice.
And do you think their nature as small businesses also makes it harder for workers to speak up because of the closeness of the workplace and also just that they're so easily pinpointed as being the one who complained?
Yes, it can be, definitely. Although, you know, we deal with some big corporations too, and I've got to say the managers there, there's a similar amount of pressure applied. So although smaller businesses, you're right, it can be that level of, and also the lack of options too is another part of the problem. A bigger business is going to have more people to call on when people are sick in terms of replacing people. So there's that pressure. If you've got a small number of employees, you haven't got that many options. And we understand that, and that's, you know, these are all problems. But you've got to look at the priorities, and the priorities particularly at the moment are that it's more important that the virus does not spread and isn't spread at work. And quite frankly, with the hospitality, mostly they're dealing with food anyway. So people, you know, even as customers, we shouldn't be wanting and we should be demanding that the businesses we go to eat at and to drink at aren't using workers who are sick to prepare our food and beverages. So even in normal times, this shouldn't be happening. And that's, I guess, the point is that it's in everyone's interest to not be happening on an ongoing basis, because the last thing any business wants is its customers to get sick. We saw in Australia, again in the Victorian outbreak, there were several, a number of cases linked to McDonald's restaurants that caused a major disruption there, having to be closed, having to be cleaned, customers having to be contacted. So, yeah, it's not something anyone wants to happen, and it's in everyone's interest.
If there were more sick days available, or if they were available from day one, do you think workers would actually take them? Or is Absolutely. This sort of cultural No. problem too endemic?
Look, there are problems with people turning up to work sick, but I tell you, in the hospitality industry, it is the main problem is workers not having paid leave. That is the fundamental thing, or pressure being put on them. And if you haven't got any paid leave, of course, you're more susceptible to pressure, because it's like, well, for instance, you could use your annual leave, but the employer doesn't have to. Okay, they're not obliged to. It makes sense to do it, wouldn't it? But some employees say no. So there's a lot of ways that not having paid leave available, that in itself is a problem, but it also allows other pressure to be put on the people to come to work and expectations made. I think having paid leave is also a good signal to people. It's like, yeah, if I've got paid leave, that means it's reasonable, you know, it's reasonable. And particularly, for instance, those with children, the 5 days minimum is just not enough. I mean, effectively, we've got young children, you have to stay at home to look after them. That's a huge problem, because 5 days just isn't enough. You've basically got the same amount of sick leave that you might have, having to try and cope with the sick leave levels of 2, 3, or 4 people. So that is a huge problem. Having that paid sick leave available, I think that will make people, not only the way you're forced to it, but it makes them feel that, yeah, it's okay for me to take a sick leave. It's okay. And also, having that level of sick leave means businesses can work through, okay, at the moment it's 5 days, okay, so I'm going to plan for enough labour for 5 days a year. Well, actually, probably need more than that. So businesses can go, yeah, well, it's 10 days now, so I need to think about my staffing levels and that amount of cover, having that available. So I think it'd be a good signal for workers and employers to say, yep, we need to plan for this, make allowances for this.
Do you think it creates anxiety in workers being frontline staff and having their health at the hands of management policy?
Oh, absolutely. I tell you what, the move from level 4 to level 3, that first day, which many people remember, when the fast food drive-throughs opened, you know, and there was a lot of talk and people in the media and saying, what are you going to get, looking forward to it, that's okay. But you can imagine yourself being a worker standing at that window, and for McDonald's, it was their busiest day in history. So the workers were standing at that window as the country came out of level 4, and it was hundreds of people going past them. You know, they were terrified, quite frankly. They were terrified. And the idea that what should terrify us all is that the idea that a worker felt that they have to come to work and they're standing there one day sick, maybe coughing, sneezing, even talking, as we know, as hundreds of customers go past them. You know, that genuinely concerns people. So it's not just their own health, but they're really concerned that they also, because they face so many people, that they could be spreading it to the customers as well. Absolutely. It is a deep concern. And it's something that's been going on for years and years and years, but I think COVID-19 has really brought it to the fore. People going, this isn't right. It's not right that I feel I have to or I've been forced to come to work sick.
That was the National Secretary of Unite Union speaking about hospitality workers being pressured to go to work sick. We had a text in on this, which Jemima will now read.
Yeah, so somebody texted in saying, re-sick leave. Another issue is I have 2 school-aged children, so I have to split my 5-day sick leave between the 3 of us. So absolutely no chance of me possibly getting sick, which is, again, another very relevant issue that I'm sure a lot of people struggle with when, yeah. And I suppose that is also related to kids going back to school now and the fear of, you know, COVID-19 getting whipping around a whole bunch of kids as well.
It's all linked.
Yeah, it's all linked. What a good connection that text made us have. Anyway, let's go.
Yeah, we'll be right back after a short musical interlude.
This is Taking by Alex G. You're listening to The Wire on 95BFM.
Te whakarongo koe ki te wire, marunga irirangi pō.
The Wire.
You are tuned into The Wire on 95BFM. For our election coverage, which will start up again in a couple of weeks, I spent a good hour last week speaking to Māori Party co-leader John Tamahere about the party's views on our focus policy areas, housing, local economy, health and the referendums, environment, foreign affairs and human issues. I also got to briefly speak to John about what he thinks his party's standings are in this election, as the 2017 election saw them exit Parliament with not enough votes to hold a seat in the House. It is said that it is difficult for a party to re-enter Parliament after losing their representation in the House. Dr. Lara Greaves, politics and public policy lecturer at the University of Auckland, told TVNZ's Breakfast that it's difficult for parties to get back into Parliament. These parties find themselves disconnected from the resources a Parliament presence provides. Only Winston Peters has actually managed to make a comeback. Greaves also spoke to the difficulty in polling Māori electorates, resulting in inaccuracy. Here is John Tamahere from the Māori Party speaking on this issue. Some political analysts have said that it'll be, quote, a really hard ask for the Māori Party to return to Parliament, saying that it's hard for any smaller party to regain entry into Parliament after not winning seats in the last election. What are your thoughts on this?
Oh, look, we all know that this is a COVID election, and we all know that when you're at war, okay, in a war mode, all the authority and conformity, the whole community conforms under the leader, spills under the leader straight away, and there is a good reason for that. It's just a herd approach. It's a biological fact. It's happened under Winston Churchill, happened under Hitler, happened under Stalin. I mean, in war modes. Now, the fact of the matter is that the enemy has arrived on our whenua for the first time. And that then raises the conformity to herd under one leader. And that's why, rightly so, Jacinda's through the roof, right? And so it's the most unusual landscape, this election. Pre-COVID, we were looking at no less than three seats. No less than three seats. Post-COVID, even the National Party went into lockdown this week for 48 hours to try and work something out. You know, so bad are their polls. So it's just unusual. It's just never before seen politics where a Prime Minister is stratospheric. No doubt about that. Okay, and for good reason. And for good reason. And that's why in an election process it makes it very difficult when the whole population is driving under conformity, and you're obliged in a democracy to ask questions of the leadership. You with me? And then you're seen as doubting the team of 5 million. Very difficult.
That was The Wire.
That was the Tuesday Wire for another week. You were just listening to Māori Party co-leader John Tamahere speaking on his thoughts on his party's standing in this year's election. I'd just like to say a huge thank you to everyone who spoke with us for the show today, and thank you very much to all of you listening out there, texting in. Always lovely to hear from you. Thank you very much, Hannah, for being a wonderful producer as always. All good. And yeah, we will catch you next time. Stay safe out there, wear your mask, wash your hands, and yeah, just look after each other and be kind. We'll catch you next time.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.